Next in your program, you have Rabia Gibbs. Unfortunately, Rabia was unable to make it, but we have Alicia Schumar here. Alicia is the university archivist at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, Tennessee. As the university archivist, she oversees the processing, preservation, and management of over 3,000 linear feet of multi-format university archives and manuscript collections. In recent years, Alicia has focused on preserving and providing access to digital archival materials, both digital derivatives and born digital records. Alicia has her digital archives specialist certification through SAA, that's the Society of American Archivists, and now working on implementing specific guidelines and workflows for accessioning and preserving electronic records. Prior to UTK Libraries, Alicia worked at the Archive Service Center at the University of Pittsburgh as the Helen Clay Frick Collection Archivist. Alicia holds an MLIS from the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm a stand-in for my colleague Rabia Gibbs, but we both worked on this project, so if you have any really, really good questions, I'll try to answer them to the best of my ability. If not, we'll get back to you. So basically what we're gonna talk about today is our World War II Oral History Digitization Project. And so at the University of Tennessee, we don't have a ton of oral history collections. And so this was a collection that came from a backlog. It came from a donation to a separate center on campus, the Center for the Study of War and Society. This is within the history department, separate from the university library. And it was created in 1984, and it was created to collect the rapid loss of veterans' stories and the cultural effect of war. So the broader scope is that we're trying to get all the cultural aspects of going through war, being on the home front, and being able to capture that for the future. So in the Oral History Project, the center really wants to document the impact of the social impact of war. And so we just focused on collecting East Tennessee and Appalachia citizens and their experience first. But what was different about this process is that they kind of wanted to talk about the life before you went into service, during service, and then after when you came back from service. So try to get the whole scope of serving throughout a lifetime. So the center on campus has worked directly with Special Collections. But over time, it's sort of lost its connection and its mission to collect things together. So in the last couple of years, we tried to reestablish that relationship with the center, and we wanted to focus on a project that they wanted to complete, as well as working with our collections to make them more discoverable. So in talking with them and their current goals, they decided that they wanted to do a digital project of some of these older oral history collections. And some of the ones that were in most need were the World War II oral histories. So currently, we have a collection that resides in Special Collections, and it's 355 linear feet of material. That's including cassette tapes, newspapers, letters, photographs, unfortunately, even some things that they've got from war that they've taken, photographs, paintings, that kind of thing that was all donated as once. And they actually even donated a World War II issued handgun in the collection that was in there undocumented for 25 years. So that was a special day when my student worker brought me that box and said, hey, do I need to build a custom enclosure for this? And I'm like, okay, so I have to call the university police and they have to come and get it taken in the safe. But, you know, that's the experience of trying to work with these multi-format collections. So mixed into those multi-format collections are the audio cassette tapes from our World War II collection. But basically, it's one large collection that consists of 200 smaller collections. So each individual person's donation could very well be its own collection in itself. So in reestablishing that relationship, we went back through this 355 linear feet of collections and tried to pull out the audio recordings and to see what kind of documentation we had with them. So that was the biggest task, and that's sort of something I wanted to talk about. It was one of our largest challenges. Since this collection wasn't donated directly to Special Collections, it was donated through the center. The way that they documented receiving the collection could just very well be a name on a note card, signing something that they actually donated to the University of Tennessee, to the History Department. So the documentation was sort of all over the map. But we went through, and from the 350-some linear feet, we found out that we had about 167 oral histories that we had documentation rights to actually move them along and digitize them and actually put them online. There was another 200 or so that we're still evaluating and trying to get the documentation from the center and from their backlogs of records, but that we're still working through the process. So this is a sort of our first phase into digitizing this oral history collection. But again, from those 160-some cassette tapes, it was a little bit more than what we could do in-house with our student labor. We do have a lot of students, but we don't have a lot of equipment or the time it took to do this, and so we looked at other avenues to getting this material digitized. So we worked together, Ruby and I worked together, and sort of debated on what we could do to get this material digitized and what we actually needed from it to make it, to preserve it, to migrate it, and to make it available. So we decided to write a grant. We eventually settled on an NHPRC grant for digitizing hidden collections. And then we had to kind of look at their requirements. What do we need? What are the preservation standards? What do we want to make available? How do we want to make it available? And so sort of working through the process of answering all those questions. So we really didn't have a lot, since we don't have a lot of oral histories, we didn't have a lot of digitizing oral history material. So working through this and a couple standards from different institutions, we worked online and we decided we needed three copies, a preservation copy, an intermediate copy, and then a use copy so we can kind of move through them. These collections, I have to go back and say that there are no transcripts to each one of these oral histories. So it could have as many as 3 hours of an oral history, but there is nothing more than maybe a small abstract to what they're exactly talking about. So that makes it even more difficult. So really what we're doing with these is that once we get this use copy, we're sending them back to the center and their army of student workers, and they're going to work on the transcriptions. So we kind of have to backtrack, get it digital, and then get it to them, and then really start moving through and writing up a transcript that we can send out and link to these digital files. So we also had to come up with a unique naming schema, since there really was no metadata associated with these tapes other than the name of the donor. How we're going to name them, how we're going to preserve them, how we're going to track them through the future. And then we also had to come up with Dublin Core standards for description and also the technical metadata that we needed. So publishing the content, right now we're in the digitization phase of getting the oral histories digitized. And so for our future publishing of the content, we're kind of doing it in a multi-format. We're going to publish it through Islandora, a digital platform. And also we're going to host it on our own streaming server. And then also we've been putting a lot into a digital social media type site called HistoryPin. It allows you to pin photographs, oral histories, to locations. And so if we know where the donor lived or where they're from, we can pin it to that location. And so once you're in this map, you can go to those locations and find those histories of people that might be your neighbors. And we're also going to make the OII record accessible through the Digital Public Library of America. And so basically, that's our ideal for publishing our content once we get them back through and digitized and through getting some more than just an abstract for them and getting a larger transcript for them. But right now, we're really proud of it being this is the first phase and getting them out of the 355 linear feet of multi-format material stored in a really hot old building on campus. And so it's been a trial from actually taking custody of the records from the center, bringing them into special collections, getting them defined, reprocessing them, which generally has to happen, and also coming up with all this background metadata to even send them out to get digitized. So it's been, when you talk about an oral history project, it's great to talk about digitizing, but sometimes that's even the easiest part of it. It's really doing going backwards and getting all the information you need to move it forward to actually get it digitized. So we didn't realize how big of a step that was going to be doing all the back-end work before even moving it forward to getting it digitized. Some of the other interesting things that we ran into is the rights. The Center for War and Society had different rights requirements than than Special Collections does. So their forms were different than our forms, and so University of Tennessee Legal Department had a field day with us trying to say that we're going to go ahead and digitize these and put them online. So that's where we hit a stumbling block with them because the rights didn't match up. And so that's sort of where the other 150 or so oral histories that did not have the rights are kind of in a holding pattern right now because we're not actually able to move those forward and put them online. And the granting agency wouldn't let us do it because we didn't have the rights to those either. Our file format selection, the three iterations of the oral history project that resided with the center started in the 80s, again in the 90s, and then another one in the late 2000s here. And they all had different documentation, different file formats, different types, different tapes, different experiences, everything across the board that you could ask for came from these oral histories. So there isn't a lot of consistency. So in describing them, we're going to have to let our student workers know how to work through that. And also the metadata and technical description, we have to recreate all the metadata for this because it doesn't exist with the collection. So we're actually having to go back and do biographies on these people that donated the material just to have a background, what infantry they're with, where did they serve, what theater were they in. And so that's been a lot of legwork as well. So we're really proud to get these digitized, but the work that we have to get all the metadata connected to it is still in the process, but I think once we get them out, it's gonna open up a new avenue for research within the university and across the world for these digitized oral histories. This is mine and Rabia's contacts, if there's any questions about that, but I can take questions now. The interviews were done individually. You could either send in your own. There was no sort of format. You could record it on your own on a cassette and send it in. You could come into the Center for War and Society. You could work with the staff there, but there's still not a lot of consistency between the interviews they did there. They sort of just started the tape, and whatever you wanted to talk about was what you talked about.
I mean, there's nobody went out in the field and talked.
They did a little bit in the 90s, but they've received funding and then didn't receive funding, and so this wasn't just their primary collecting area. But coming in there and reevaluating the collections and talking about reprocessing, when I got in there, it was cassette tape, newspaper, photograph, artifact. So really separating those out and trying to get them preserved has been a bit of a challenge. Any other questions?